Hello, this is Pastor Galen from the First Nazarene Church in Chicago, and welcome to our podcast. Hey, before we hear the message today, I simply wanted to say that no matter where you're at, we're glad that you're listening today. We hope this message will inspire you, instruct you, and help you grow in your relationship with Jesus. And if you live in the Chicagoland area, maybe this is the first step for you joining us in person sometime. Or if you want to, you can always check out our online live services every Sunday on our website at firstnaz.cc. Thanks again for joining us. Enjoy the message.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the last Sunday of our series called Fight for Your Life. And you're going to meet him in a little bit more. Would you say welcome to my friend Jared Ritchie? Now, don't go too far. I'm going to ask for a big welcome in a few minutes. So we just want to say, I just wanted you to know why he was sitting here. So this series has been really, really personal in many, many ways. We have talked about dealing with evil, dealing with sin, dealing with a personal evil. We've talked about not being transformed by the world, right? And so if you've been following this series and you come back to this moment, it's going to be personal today. It's a little bit different, but I promise you when we're done today, we're going to come back to the fight for your life, which is really about fighting the good fight of faith. Before I turn things over and introduce my friend and we hear what God is doing in the fight on a different block, I think it would be good for those of you who may be new or for those who may be just checking us out or maybe you've been around for a while, to set up the conversation today. There's a reason for it. First Nazarene Church has been serving in Chicago since 1904 officially. Prior to that, there were prayer meetings going on. And one of the things that has helped the longevity of our cause and the longevity of the church is that every few years, God will do a new thing. You can go back through our history and you'll find that there is a renewal and there's a rejuvenation every few years. And we're living out some of that today. In 2000 to 2015, several years ago, leadership recognized the shift that the culture around us was taking. And that's a whole, you've heard me talk about it, but that's a whole nother conversation. We recognized changes that were coming. We had no idea that we would wind up being shut down for a year or more. But God began to get us ready. And we talked during those years, and then we began to move forward in ministry along the idea that we need to clarify who we are, simplify what we do, and multiply. The idea of clarifying a win, because as a church, we can go very, very wide, right? And sometimes with good things, but we wanted to clarify, what's a win? What are we really here to do? And as part of that, we reestablished our core values. We talked about our mission statement, but what we're here to talk about today really has to do with the vision that came out of that. The vision that came out of that was that we wanted to be a church that would leverage the resources of a large church. And in the Nazarene world, we're a larger church with the personality and proximity of a small church to develop the church where it's needed most, which was right down the block. We recognized that if we're going to fulfill the Great Commission, if we're going to be who God called us to be, if we're going to reach people, we got to get closer to them. And so we begin to talk about how can we get back on the block. And if you have followed much of what's happened in the last few years, I've talked about this. Churches are closing in the Chicagoland area, and a lot of smaller churches are closing. And so, when we lose that land, we don't get it back. And so we just said, we've got to find ways to multiply. And that's included all kinds of things like our Celebrate Recovery going into Timberline Knolls, the treatment center, and us doing ministry in different areas of Chicago. We're serious about that. And if you're new to the church, this might be a helpful moment because we don't just have core values. We don't just have a vision. We're really committed to seeing that they are fulfilled. And the best way to describe it, or one of the ways to describe it, is from this passage of Luke chapter 2. Now, Luke chapter 2, the Christmas story, right? Even if you didn't read your Bible, you watched Charlie Brown, you've heard a little bit of that. Through Luke chapter, when you get to the end, Jesus has 12 years old or so, and his parents go to the temple and they lose him. Mary thought Joseph had him. Joseph thought Mary had him. And so they are on their way back when they realize he's not there. And they begin this search for him. And when they find him in the temple. And mom walks up and says, "What are you doing? You scared us to death." Or that's the Wangler version of that translation. And he goes, "Why were you searching for me? Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" Now, that phrase "in my father's house" means more than just being in the house. It means, and the King James really does a pretty good job of translating that, about my father's business, about what we've been called to do. At First Naz, we are really committed to the business of Jesus, to seek and to save that which was lost, to so live our lives that the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven, can come and people can experience God in a real way. For us, that's business. That's what we're about. We're serious about it. If you're new to our church, we don't do a lot of drama. We don't get a lot caught up in, you know, our own preferences about different things. We are about reaching people. And when I say business, many of you are business leaders, and over the years, I always enjoy having a chance to ask somebody what they do. And it's interesting how things shift when they start talking about their business. I mean, you can be talking about, you know, the Bears if for some reason you wanted to, or anything else. But then you talk to business and people will sit up a little straight, right? And then because now you're talking about something that is in their wheelhouse. Well, what we're talking about today is in our wheelhouse. Let me give you yet another example, and I'm always looking for these that will give you a picture of how serious we are about this. So someday, Lenny and I are going to raise chickens. I don't know when, I don't know how much of the rec field we'll need to take up to do it or whatever, but we've got this thing where eventually we'd like to do that. We'd like to be on a small farm. And so I've gotten to know some farmers, and we talk, and when you talk to farmers, there's this thing that always comes up. You don't go very far before they'll say something like, "Well, you know, you gotta have a tractor." Right? And so you get to the tractor talk. Now, follow me. I want you to think John Deere for a moment. Tractor, right? 1826 or something like that is when John Deere began his work. And if you go to any, a lot of times, even in the suburbs here, you'll see this happen. But if you go to any rural area, you're going to see these celebrations when they have the Spring Fest or the Fall Fest, where they'll line up all the John Deere tractors and they'll come in and it becomes a parade thing, and everybody's proud of their tractor, and that's a beautiful thing. And as a matter of fact, I was looking online, and when you buy a tractor now, you can actually order a tractor parade seat, because that's how often they get used that way. So the homecoming queen or whoever, or, you know, we'll probably get one for Lindy and or whatever. But at any rate, in the midst of that, and so you begin to think, but if you spend any time at all with a farmer, he will tell you, "Yeah, that's fine, but that is not what a tractor is for. This is what a tractor is for." Now, this is actually a snapshot I grabbed out of a video, and I'm using some new technology, and I couldn't get the video to play, but I'm going to, because when I do, I'm going to turn it up loud in here so that you hear the sound of that tractor just purring through and moving through. I'm going to make it so loud. I'm going to test it the week before and make sure my ears bleed before we bring you all in. It's going to be so loud millennials are going to run from the room because of loud. Because it just spoke to me when I saw that tractor. You see, this is not church. This is not what it's about. This is what the kingdom is about. And for us to be out there, we've said, matter of fact, one of the things that came out of our revisioning in 2013 to 15 was that we recognize that what happens outside of this room is most of the time much more important than what happens inside this room. And what happens in this room is important. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we're renewed in this room. Some of you pray to accept Christ in this room. And hopefully every time that you come, God is speaking and nudging and guiding. But if this is it, then this is who we are. And that's not the church. To seek and to save is a muddy business. And this is about kingdom business. So we are really committed to reaching people and to making a difference. Well, so one day I was in the mud, and I met my friend Jared Ritchie. Jared is a new pastor at Ridgeland Church. He's been there right at a year, not quite a year, under a year. Previously was the Oaklawn Church of the Nazarene for a long period of time. And what happened was in about 2019, the pastor of that congregation called me and said, "Brian, we're struggling. I'm getting ready to retire, and we've kind of been stuck." And his name is Gary Ailes, and I'll tell you, we have a debt to pay to Gary. We're so grateful for Gary because pastors don't do this. And he said, "I'm going to be retiring in the next year or so. Would you be willing to begin to meet with my leaders and talk about the future and just get them ready?" And I mean, pastors don't do that, but Gary loved the church so much. And I went in. And so in the fall of 2020, finally, we talked about it for a while. Finally, in the fall of 2020, I met with the board. And of course, here's some leaders who love their church who are trying to figure out why the guy's coming from Chicago first. You know, what are you doing here? And I'm like, "Hey, we're committed to helping this issue of renewal and revisioning." And so we became friends. And then in 21, between January all the way through, really through June, a couple times a month, I would go over and I would meet with these leaders. And they'd been there a while. And we would talk about change, and we would talk about what that meant, because it's difficult, and we would talk about what was happening in the neighborhood and the community. And they begin to give me a profile of the person that they thought should be their next pastor. And they said, "We want someone who's entrepreneurial. We want someone who's fearless and just going to go, and things have got to change, Pastor." And if you've ever been in a church where people are saying that stuff to you, and you've been in the business 5 minutes, you know they think they know what that means, but they don't necessarily. And I would stop them and go, "I'm not sure you really want that." And they'd go, "Yes, we do." And so we worked all that out, and we were ready to bring in a leader, but I didn't have one. And so I called Dr. McCain, and Dr. McCain, our district superintendent, and his wife Denise are with us sitting down here today. And Dr. McCain says, "I've got a guy." Now that's how you know you're Chicago-fied. Right? When you got a guy. And he introduced me to this young man, Jared Ritchie. And now I want you to give a Chicago first welcome to my friend Jared.
Thank you.
So, not quite a year ago, you accepted the responsibility, moved in. Tell us what's happening.
So first, I just want to say thank you to Pastor Brian, the work that he did with the board and coaching and, you know, the transition and some behind the scenes work that even Pastor Phil did and everything was really critical to even be able to be sitting here and talking about what we're talking about. So you guys have great leaders in Pastor Brian and Pastor Phil and your team. So we are excited to be relaunching Oaklawn Church of the Nazarene as Ridgeland Church. And before I dive in too much into what we're doing now, I think history is important because it shows what we've inherited. And so Argo Church of the Nazarene actually started in Summit, Argo in 1926 by a lay preacher. And then over time in revivals and lay people working in factories and bringing people to the church, they grew and they went through these multiple missional movements, these missional shifts of two or three different buildings in the Argo area. And then came 1965 and they're like, "We see a need in our community and we want to respond to it, but it's going to take an even bigger move." And that's going to be moving out of Argo, which was the one stipulation for the entire, for the congregation up until that point in time. But they wanted to open up a day nursery to support the new flood of working mothers in the workforce. And so they wanted to respond to that need and provide Christian childcare for that. And so they took the leap and moved to Oaklawn, which caused all kinds of mess. They were excited, and then some people split off and started a church in Hickory Hills, and some people stayed back in Argo. But a core group of people was committed to fulfilling this vision. And that preschool, we're still operating today and has been serving the community since 1965. And the church has been serving in that community since 1965. When the church moved there, it was literally fields. We have pictures that it's literally fields. And now, within, I think, 20 miles, it's like 500,000 people or something like that. So, and so through all the test of time and change and shifts, they've remained faithful. And in fact, you have a faithful congregant here, Martha Heineman, who her husband pastored for 15 years. And he was actually only two pastors ago. There's been two pastors in the last 36 years. At Oak Lawn. And so so there is great ministry and great ministry. And so now when I landed and the board had already decided, they said, we're going to relaunch the church. It wasn't an option. And they said, we would love to do it within a year, which breaks all kinds of new pastor rules. But we dug in and just started to pray that God would lead us into what he is calling us to do in our part of the world and in our neighborhoods. And so one of the things that, you know, the Lord kind of impressed upon me, because I'm a planner and everything, and that gets in the way a lot of times, that he just said, I'm going to bring you opportunities and you're going to say yes.
Wow.
That I'm going to bring you opportunities and people and you're going to say yes. And you're not going to know what it means and you're not going to necessarily know how it's going to work out. But, you know, that's, he was kind of telling me, this is how I'm going to remind you that I'm in control. And so a lot of what you're going to see is what the Lord has brought and we're just trying to say yes to. And then the Lord is also helping to bring people to fulfill really the vision that he has laid out. And so we changed our name to Ridgeland Church because only a third of our people even lived in Oak Lawn. And this Ridgeland Avenue is a huge thoroughfare that actually ends just like a half a mile north of us.
30,000 cars.
30,000 cars a day. Yeah. Go up and down Ridgeland. So it's 91st and Ridgeland. And Ridgeland goes through a lot of our core communities. And so we still wanted to be locational, but at the same time, I know that's not a word, but I made it up, locational. Still want to be locational, but at the same time, more represent our current congregation. And so that's how we got to Ridgeland Church. And we've just actually had a unanimous vote for this name change. So it's great to see the church have a strong
unity. That's another thing you don't get in your first year is a unanimous vote on anything. Yeah.
So this is Martha Heineman and Larry. They served there for 15 years. And so you might recognize her around here, but they, some of the best stories that I hear from people who have been there for a while is under the leadership of Larry Heineman. And so we're blessed to be able to receive this work
and
that they
we,
worked
we honored on. Martha in the first service and just said thank you. And I said in the first service, Larry used to sit right back over there. And if he was still with us, and from heaven, if whatever, I don't know, but if he was still with us, he would be amen in every single thing, because that was his thought, was reach people. Yeah.
So we started to ask ourselves, what are we supposed to do, and seek the Lord on it. And one of the things that really stuck out was just Jesus' instruction of how we are to pray at the beginning of the Lord's Prayer, which is that God's kingdom would come and his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we're like, well, that's kind of feels like what our vision should be. This already, but not yet. It can be accomplished, but will never ultimately be accomplished until Jesus comes back. And so we've just adopted as our vision in our neighborhoods as it is in heaven. And so we started to ask the question, what does it mean for heaven to show up in our neighborhoods? What does it mean for heaven to break through our neighborhoods and break through the front doors of the houses of people who need to know who Jesus is? And so we thought, also just going back to what Jesus said the greatest commandment was, which was to love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor as yourself, that we would simply make our mission to love our neighborhood by being present, being love, and being all in, that we would just love our neighborhood, that we would love our neighbor. And I know that we can get into everyone is your neighbor, and that's true, and that's good. But sometimes then we forget about our physical neighbor,
right?
Like the one right next to us. And so we're really—
the one who irritates us every
yes.
once in a while.
Yeah, they blow leaves in your yard or don't shovel their sidewalk or— they're too loud, you know, in the summer times, too late. But what if we loved our physical neighbor, got to know their name, prayed for them, invited them over for dinner? And so We believe that in loving our neighborhood, we truly can make a difference. One of the things that stuck in my mind and that we've kind of had as a leadership team is within just a few months of me getting, of us moving into town, there was two teenagers that were shot in our neighborhoods. And one of the things that we talked about as a team is that we truly believe that if we love our neighborhoods, that we could stop that from happening. That if we transform our neighborhoods with the love of Jesus and it permeates through the lives of individuals, yes, brokenness is still there and evil will still happen, but what if that apartment complex loved each other? Like, what if that apartment complex was filled with the love of Jesus by a few people? And so we believe that we can love our neighborhoods by being present, being love, and being all in. And so we kind of just continue the movement of that. And we've accepted as our common life, a common life as a people, as a church. Once again, just we looked at the life of Jesus and we were just like, he was trying to set up a common life for a people that was active and living, yet set apart from the world and the way they live. That people ask questions, that we lived a questionable life. Why are you living in that way? And so we
wow, let me interrupt you. So to live a questionable life, that's a context I would never have put that in. But it's pretty powerful where people are going, what is up, right?
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Why you don't even know me. Why do you love me in this way? Yeah. And so we've accepted we strive. So these are our missional movements and rhythms, and this is our discipleship is based off of this. Our ministries are based off of this. They're shaped around it. This is what holds us accountable and keeps us accountable. This is what calls us into unity together as a people to strive to be present by intentionally going with compassion and through awareness. To be present. We seek to be loved by knowing God with no condemnation through serving, and we commit to be all in by remaining in Christ with the gospel through growing. And all of that's built out a little bit more, but really what this is trying to do is just trying to mimic the life of Jesus, trying to imitate Jesus. And so just looked through the way Jesus interacted with the society around him and culture around him and his disciples and be like, what are these movements and rhythms of Jesus's life? And so this is what we came
so
up with.
So you told me a story about a kind of a vision of, if you're part of a church family, there's care that happens and you receive, there's love that happens, but this vision is literally to make it so that on the block of someone who is part of this church, talk about the potential for the lady losing her husband or whatever, and then the church is there even though they're not part of the church. Talk about that.
Yeah, so we have really two big pushes, and that's our community initiative or our neighborhood initiatives and our community wells, we're calling them. And so our neighborhood initiatives, like what Pastor Brian was talking about, is we really want to create neighboring communities. We want to help our neighbors and our neighborhoods re-neighbor each other. And so to be a part of our neighboring communities, you don't have to be a follower of Jesus. You don't, even if you are a follower of Jesus, you don't have to go to our church and you won't be even pressured to go to our church. What we believe is that creating neighborhoods that love one another can truly transform and change lives. And so we're hoping to build a network and communication through a custom platform that people can join and connect with their neighbors and ask for requests and offer up help. So if we have someone who's recently widowed and they need help taking care of the stuff that they're not used to taking care of, that they would have neighbors that come around and know her and shovel her snow or rake her leaves or just make meals or go and sit and talk, just be present quite literally in her life, or a family that's struggling and there's job loss, but like what if a neighborhood came around and just provided Thanksgiving meal for them so maybe it impacts them a little bit less, or Christmas, or just a series of meals to help them get back on their feet. It's just creating neighborhoods that care for one another. And really, this kind of used to happen, so it's kind of almost a callback to how neighborhoods kind of used to operate, that you can almost trust your kids playing outside with other kids.
Yeah, back when we lived on the front porch, not the back deck.
Yeah.
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 We have, I mean, I still have a detached garage, so. So, and then really the core of those neighboring communities are our common life groups, which are people who are part of our church. There are, there'll be the leaders, there'll be the facilitators, the coordinators. And then with this, we're trying to launch in an intentional way. So we're launching May 21st of this year, and that's a Saturday. And so we're launching with a large community block party for Oak Lawn. And we have like six other core communities that our people are in. And so we're actually going to be launching in each community intentionally in those neighborhoods with community block parties. So six community block parties all throughout the summer to just kind of invite and connect the community. We're inviting police and fire and the villages, just trying to create as much connection as possible in our launch.
So the church is relaunching, and you're going to meet on Sunday. You're having worship on Sunday.
Yeah.
But that's not when they relaunch. They're relaunching in the neighborhood with these block parties to say, hey, we're here. We want to help. We, you know, all of those things. So it becomes a six relaunch instead of just a one. And that's unique.
So, and we're getting good feedback from that. People are excited about it, and we're thrilled with that, of course. And then also the other thing is that we wanted to create community wells, and so since we're kind of decentralizing and kind of, I mean, we still have our Sunday mornings. It's primarily for followers of Jesus, part of our church, you know, discipleship and digging in and fellowship and encouragement. But we also have a great property, and we also think, you know, we want to kind of help reclaim property.
Yeah.
And create community wells that people in our community come to that is grafted into the life of the community, where people can build connection and relationship and get information and be resourced. But then go away with life-giving water. And so that's kind of, and so our goal is to launch a couple different community wells. One, we're essentially turning into our church property into, we are turning our church property into a community well. And I'll just go through these fairly quickly because, I mean, I can go in depth on a whole bunch of different things. But one of the things that we're trying to do is just listen to the needs of our neighborhood and needs of our community. And so there's not really a great place to meet. I mean, there's Starbucks and a ton of Dunkin'. You all love Dunkin' up here, like a
Man.
Lot. And it's great. But there's also not a lot of seating areas. And so we're opening a free fair trade community cafe. You'll be able to come in, get free drip coffee and a hot tea. And that's on our property, in our building. And it'll be a place that anybody can come and just meet with anybody. They can, you know, there'll be free Wi-Fi. So if you can work remotely and you're tired of seeing, you know, the walls of your house, you know, you can come and hang out there. We're expanding our Little Lights Academy, which is our preschool, to better serve our community. We have more than enough people on our wait list. And so we're trying to expand within our building to be able to increase that number to be able to serve the community and do more holistic family ministry to those families.
You've actually got a staff member now assigned to those families.
Yeah, so we hired a family care director to kind of bridge the gap and do our family ministries for the church. And when we say the church, we mean our preschool as well.
Right.
So offering care above and beyond them bringing their kid to our preschool.
Right.
We will be expanding that. And then also, we are launching a farmer's market on our property because there's not a farmer's market in our area. And that was something that we heard from the community. Hey, we would love to have a Saturday morning farmer's market.
Someday you'll be able to buy eggs from us.
What?
Someday you'll
be
able to buy eggs.
Yeah, you can be one of our vendors. Wangler eggs. So we have the market on Ridgeland, we're getting a lot of buzz and excitement from Chamber of Commerce and potential sponsors and businesses, and so that's going to be a huge, just bringing people onto our property and building relationships with them and connecting them. And then we're launching an after-school program in the fall, 2 days a week. After-school programs are shutting down in our area because there's low enrollment, but it's because it's too expensive.
Mm.
And so we're going to offer a low-cost barely covers what we need after school program that is for elementary school and junior high, but then we're going to use high school students that are needing community service hours from like National Honor Society and everything to kind of do big brother, big sister, and then there's going to be an adult leader with them helping to do the mentorship and discipling and everything. And so and then this idea, the Mendable Center, is something that definitely wasn't mine. But like I said, the Lord is just bringing people who said, is this loving our neighborhood? What if we did this by loving our neighborhood? And so I have a gentleman, Scott Hedge, who's on our board now, but he is a licensed social worker and licensed clinical social worker. And he's like, we are underserved with clinical like faith-based counseling and in our area. And so we've been dreaming with him, and you know, we're in the 12-month process now to launch the Mendable Center, which its whole thing is that I'm mendable, that there are none too broken. And so it's going to be a mental health and compassionate ministry center that does recovery groups and serving the least of these. And so we're partnering actually with a great nonprofit that's already doing incredible work in our area that primarily serves the homeless and those struggling with addiction. And we're looking at even sharing a space to kind of do a one-stop shop for our community. And so that's in the process as well.
You know, as culture shifts and as church shifts, we've all talked about the exodus that's happened of young people, and you are one, you're a young person, but I think one of the things that this is going to do is it's going to give, whether it's millennials or whatever other age, you know, range you want to use, this is a unique opportunity. This is a new look for the church. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah. So if you're born between 1977. And 1995, then you're a millennial. So the youngest millennial is 27. I'm 28, so I'm barely a millennial. I'm kind of a mutt when it comes to generations. So the millennials are 27 years old now. And really the biggest thing, I think the challenge with the church and millennials is validating passion. Mm-hmm. Is just validating the passion that this generation has. And one note, maybe this is just information for like church in general, is that millennials really will, they want a seat at the table, they want a voice at the table, but if they don't get a seat at the table, they'll primarily, now this is probably overgeneralization, just lament not being there. They'll just lament not being there. Like we want to be a part. Like we want to put in our passion. So the scary thing is not millennials. I mean, millennials are becoming our pastors and our leaders and, you know, and everything. And as a millennial, I have to now turn and respond actually to Gen Z, which is anyone, you know, our college students and our, you know, teens. And using table mentality, where millennials will kind of just, this is once again very overgeneralization, which I usually don't like, but is like lament not being at the table. Gen Z will just go build their own table. Mm. And it's not like out of spite. It's not out of, you know, it is quite literally like, okay, well, that's the table that you built. And if there's not room for it, that's fine. We'll just go build our table over here.
Yeah.
And they'll just start doing it. And I mean, we see even like the activism and the pushing and, you know, these like small nonprofits that are being started by high school students and college students. I mean, those are all Gen Z. They'll just do it. But I think that's an incredibly powerful force for the church of inviting everyone to the table and being, hey, let's shape our passion. Let's move in one direction. And a lot of it is, what's happening in our community? Let's care, you know, these are the things that our community kind of responds to and needs. And I mean, this is going to look different in another community. But we've had people who are on the fringes of our church, quite frankly, that are now like on our board.
Yeah.
Just like responding to what we're doing. And it's in part because we're like, hey, community first, neighborhood first. And like, you know, we're still going to gather. We're still going to take care of each other.
Right. So there may be someone who says, you know, this might be a good experience for my teenagers. This might be a good place for me to get involved or whatever. You're 11 miles from here, so it's not very far. And whether it's some level of involvement like that or whatever, how can folks help? How can they get involved?
Yeah, so
Hold on. Let me tell you one way you're already involved. I almost forgot this.
Oh, okay.
Our church board has been following this whole process. Matter of fact, we had a church board meeting in the foyer where the cafe will be finished. And every year we set aside funds for the purpose of investing in churches and just giving it away. And so it was a short conversation at the board for us to commit $20,000 to the Ridgeland Cafe. And so that's money you have already.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've already given.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
So we're excited about that. But beyond that, how can we learn more?
We would ask you, I mean, maybe it sounds cliche coming from a pastor, but we would truly ask you to pray. Prayer is one of our core principles, and
you need it because there's mud dripping from all of these things right here.
As we look back and reflect on this, I'm like, the Lord is nuts, but he really is faithful, and he's bringing people in his own time. But I kind of like to tell people that we're small but mighty because we only have like 70 members. We run on Sunday mornings, you know, 50 to 60 people. But the Lord is providing everyone that we need right now to get this going in that small group of people. So pray. We have one of our leadership teams from our board is a prayer team to keep us focused on that. So you can join us out at the table. We have a table in between these back double doors. You can sign up, give us your contact information so we can just keep you updated and what you can be praying about. You can also mark if you're interested in just getting any more information. We'll just kind of send out more information. To remind you to help pray, I mean, we have stickers and magnets and pens and everything. Feel free to come by and grab one. Yeah. And also, I mean, there's a lot that, I mean, we commit that we don't, you know, so there's all kinds of stuff that you don't have to be a part of our church if you're like, hey, I want to jump in and help with an after school program.
Yeah.
Or I, you know, want to come and support the market. Or, you know, like if you're in the field of, you know, mental health or social services and you're like, hey, I would love to just help out and, you know, brainstorm stuff for the Mendable Center.
Yeah.
We're really collaborative in that way because we know it's a community effort.
Jared, we are so excited about what God is doing, and it is such a privilege to see, and we're grateful for your commitment. There's blood, sweat, and tears behind this, and so we're grateful for your family and your commitment. I'm going to pray for Jared in a moment. Before I do, I want to remind you of something. I said that this whole personal fight for your life, his series has been personal, and it is. And here's what we know. There are people right now who are fighting for their life. And desperately, they need someone to bring some semblance of the kingdom of heaven, the unconditional love, the grace, the good news. And all of this is about connecting there. If you see me, during the week or even certainly on the weekend, I always carry a book like this. And it's, you know, I take notes. I got all Pastor Galen's sermons and stuff. And when I'm in meetings, I make notes. And I carry it with me. So, you know, the nuclear codes for the church are in here, that kind of a thing. But included in here in the back, I keep some things to remind me that what we're talking about here is not church growth or church development. We're talking about the lives and the souls of people. And I've been reminded of that. I've carried this for 6 or 7 years, these for several years, that remind me that the business that we're in, the fight that we're in, is for the souls of humanity. It's why we don't play. It's why we're serious about our commitments. And so I carry these things. One of these things is just a slip of paper that someone sent me someday that said, thank you to a church that saved a lost soul. And ever since that lady gave me that, I've hung on to it to remember that this may be just another Sunday for most of us, but for somebody, it was the difference between life and death. And then I've got the top part of a funeral program, of a funeral that I did for a 27-year-old kid who committed suicide and grew up attending this church. Another one that I have is a young lady who never came here, but she died of a heroin overdose, and she lives within 5 miles. She lived within 5 miles, and I saw it, and I thought, so close. And then there is a Connect card back when we used to do them on paper from 2015 of a young lady who sat right over here. And she was only here one time. She came to visit, and her family members had invited her, and she was a single mom in the middle of some really tough stuff. And after the service, she came up, and we prayed with her, and we tried to make a connection, and we were going to meet later in the week, and she didn't return our phone call. And she also died of an overdose on that Thursday. And I left going, not a sense of guilt. We did our best, but was there something else we could have done? Was there some other way we could have reached? Was there someplace we could have been that we could have intersected these folks before what happened happened? And that happens outside of our gathering. It happens not during the parade, but in the mud of the field. And so as God speaks to you, he may be talking to you about something that he wants to do in your neighborhood, or maybe some way that you can support and be part of what Jared is doing. We free you up 100% to do that. Or here's something else. The work that we're doing with churches right now, you may know of a church that's struggling. You may know of a church that's kind of, you know, and we have folks come once in a while. We're interested in investing in Church on the Block, whether they're Nazarene or not. We would love to be able to continue this kind of ministry. So listen to what the Lord's telling you and respond. Now I want to pray for my friend. Lord, I thank you for Jared, and I thank you for his family. I thank you for Macy. I thank you for Emma Jane. I thank you for what you're doing in their lives, for how you've uniquely prepared him for this. I thank you for those board members, Lord, who were willing to just literally let go of everything and say, Lord, lead us, and who came alongside their pastor and who made tough decisions and continue to make those decisions, who give themselves to the work. And I thank you, Father, for what you're going to do at Ridgeland and how you're going to multiply Ridgeland in other places. So bless and encourage and strengthen, and thank you for First Nazarene and all those who are here a part of that that have made our investment possible in this work and that make ministry active here. Help us, Lord, to remember that what we're about is your business. In Jesus' name we pray, amen.
Hey, thanks again for joining us for the First NAS podcast. If you're interested in what your next step in growing your relationship with God might look like, I'd encourage you to visit us at firstnaz.cc/engage, or you can download our app from the App Store, First Nazarene Church. And there you can let us know if you've made a decision for Jesus, or you can also find practical resources to help you grow closer to Jesus. I'd also invite you to subscribe to the podcast if you're not already, to make sure that you've always got the latest content. And if you want to, feel free to share this on your social accounts. You never know who else might need to hear today's message as well. Well, thanks again for joining us. Have a great day.